Hello, and welcome to Terrascope Radio. The MIT Terrascope program, in collaboration with the MIT program in Comparative Media Studies, is pleased to present a piece written and produced by four MIT freshmen. For the past year, they've been studying complex environmental problem solving. In March, they went to the place that has been the focus of their studies. Today, they bring you insights gained from their trip. Here's Lisa Song.
Far away, amid the waves of the Pacific, lies a cluster of barren volcanic islands. Formed over a deep-sea hotspot, few of the volcanoes remain active today. Born of fire, they rise, a mix of gray and green, to catch the only still cloud mass for hundreds of miles. First charted by Bishop Tomas de Berlanga in 1535, these islands have served as a base for pirating expeditions, wars, and commerce. The largest island was once a penal colony and a food source for British pirates. In the 1930s, settlers began arriving in search of a new utopian lifestyle. Bridging the equator, the islands hold close an ecology bound by a delicate web. Today, the human population increases at one of the highest rates in the world. Marine resources are shipped to distant markets. And those who govern the islands are often attached to a mainland government deeply involved in mainland matters. Set 600 miles off the northwest coast of South America, these islands are the Galapagos. They are the recently established 22nd province of Ecuador. More than 20 islands scattered throughout an area the size of Ireland form the Galapagos National Park and Marine Reserve. It's often referred to as one of the largest pristine archipelagos in the world. In the harbor of Portayura, the largest town in the Galapagos, dozens of boats are moored in the water. On one side, a line of cliffs extends out to sea. The cliff face is dotted with birds. Blue-footed boobies stand there preening, their webbed feet splayed on the rock. Whenever they see a fish, they dive down like arrows. And each impact is a tiny, bomb-like splash, barely audible over the boat engines and the sounds of the town. Helene Moorman and Garrett Marino take us to Bartolome Island, where tourists are brought to observe the wildlife.
Bartolome Island looks brown and barren from a distance. One side gently slopes upward out of the ocean, meeting the craggy cliffs on the other side in a distinct pinnacle. As our boat approaches, I can see that the island isn't as desolate as it appears. Cacti and low-lying gray shrubs have managed to grow in the meager pockets of dirt in the lava rock. As I step out of the boat, brown lava lizards the size of my finger scurry away. When they stop, they blend so well with the rock that I lose sight of them. Birds wheel overhead. A hot breeze swirls around.
As I walk along the rocky coast of Bartolome, Juan Carlos, our guide, stops to point out a cluster of brownish-green marine iguanas feeding in the water below.
Don't forget, these are the only sea-going lizards in the world. And that one is diving down right now. That's exactly what they do. They just dive down deep as 30, 40 feet. Unbelievable. And they can hold their breath for up to half an hour.
A gray and white bird drops straight into the water near the iguanas. It's a blue-footed booby looking for food.
The boobies will go straight down, right in front of the fish, like that, see? See how he made it all the way down? So when he passed the fish, he provokes this turbulence that traps the fish. And at the last moment, when he just passed it, he turns and grabs it from the head.
Our group works its way up to the island's crest. The sun beats down, scorching through clothes and sunscreen. From the top, we see a bright aqua bay and a white beach. An ancient volcanic crater is submerged in the bay, visible only as a perfect circle of light blue water that stands out brilliantly from the darker sea. The wind blows harder.
30 kilometers away from Bartolome, I step off a boat onto North Seymour Island. I'm amazed to see sea lions basking on the rocks only feet away, paying little attention to me. A particularly bold one approaches. It stops and makes a startling noise. It's hard to tell if this noise is anger, curiosity, or something else. I stare, awestruck, as the sea lion moves past, grunting the whole time. I've never experienced such fearlessness in a wild animal before. The sea lion continues on its way, uninterested.
Three male blue-footed boobies are courting one female. They stand in a semicircle around her, competing for her attention. As they whistle, the males point their wings and beaks at the sky dramatically. They rock from foot to foot, showing off bright blue webbed feet. The female honks back. After much deliberation, the female approaches one of the males. He snatches a twig from the ground and offers it to her. They touch beaks. A choice has been made, and the failed suitors wander off.
Historically, the Galapagos Islands were home to a pristine ecology that drew naturalists from around the world. Today, there are more than 20,000 permanent residents. This massive shift in demographics has drastically changed the direction of management on the islands. Balancing the impact of tourism with the use of marine resources and parklands is an important challenge. Anna Jaffe spoke with some of the local people who have dedicated their lives to these islands.
Yvonne Torres, who works for the town of Port Dayora, has lived in the Galapagos all of her life. She has worked as a naturalist and as a government official. 4 years ago, she married a fisherman. These experiences give her a unique perspective on illegal fishing, a major problem in the islands.
If you don't have food on your table, it doesn't matter what you understand about conservation or about nature. You have to do whatever you have to. As simple as that. I'm lucky, I work. Otherwise, I personally have felt the pressure of telling my husband, go and do illegal fishing, we need money. You know, I want to do the second floor of my house. You know, I want a bigger room for my kids. I want to send them to a good school. But I understand, and I prefer to withhold, you know, myself than to do something that is illegal and damage the environment. But hey, I can afford to do it. Most of the people can't.
While living standards in the Galapagos are almost three times higher than on the mainland, money, how it is used, where it goes, who has it, plays an important role. Ramiro Tumala is a naturalist and longtime educator on the islands.
A lot of the community, the people in the community, do not trust the conservationists because they are not sure, or the conservationist sector has not made sure to thoroughly inform the population of what they do, what their aim is, what projects they run, how the money that they get is being utilized. That's one of the biggest misunderstandings, and that is what causes division amongst the communities.
This confusion is rooted in reality. Instabilities in the Ecuadorian government have made park politics very difficult. In April, Ecuador's president, Lucio Gutierrez, was forcibly removed from office. In the past 2 years, the national park has seen 12 directors. Daniel Fitter, an Ecuadorian citizen born in the Galapagos, works as a naturalist guide on the islands. On a boat traveling from Santa Cruz Island to Bartolome, he talks about the park and politics.
Traditionally, the National Park and the Charles Darwin Station cooperated very well and worked together. That's become strained at the moment due to the political influences and the fact that there's been a systematic determination to get rid of the National Park's power. If you've got a very powerful, good, well-working organization, you want to reduce it to nothing so you can get on with what you want. So there's been systematic destruction of the National Park's power. The National Park's got a very tight control of how tourism operates in Galapagos, and they want to get rid of that so they can bring in bigger types of tourism.
The way tourism is run is a point of contention for people who live on the islands. Some feel that tourism should be expanded, while others disagree. Many would like to see the benefits of this tourism shift to the local population.
I feel that the biggest problem is not tourism itself, but the biggest problem is that it's directed all on the big boats, and nothing really happens here in town. There's nothing with what we call local base. The people come, get on their boat, 1 week later, they're back at the airport and out. So what are they leaving? Trash, They're left maybe 1 hour to shop in town. They don't use restaurants. They don't use bars. They barely get in the boutiques. So that's one of the biggest problems, and that's one of the things that we're trying to change.
At 5:30 in the evening, people flood into a small church in the town of Bella Vista. Everyone is waving a woven palm frond in celebration of Palm Sunday. These people are only a small part of the island's total population of more than 20,000, and yet they stand, tightly pressed in a space too small to fit them all comfortably. Immigration to the islands became a serious issue in the early 1990s. In 1998, the Ecuadorian Congress passed the Special Law of Galapagos. With its enactment, immigration to the islands became legally impossible for anyone who did not have a needed skill. Beyond marriage or birth within the Galapagos, its airports and waterways were closed to outsiders wishing to make the islands their home. Miguel Higuere is a delegate of INGALA, the Ecuadorian agency created by the Special Law of Galapagos. He is one of those responsible for determining who can come to the Galapagos.
Lo importante es el contacto con la población que uno tiene. Por lo menos tengo unas 10, 15 personas diarias visitas a INGALA.
What I value the most is contact with people. I see 10 to 15 people in INGALA every day. Many people come to the Galapagos for the economic opportunities that the islands offer. When INGALA finds people who came in illegally, we have to send them back to mainland Ecuador. Sometimes you get mothers with children who are very poor. It really hurts to send them back.
While immigration is a pressing problem, many people have been on the islands for a long time. Raul Salazar is a native of the islands and representative of San Cristobal's fishing cooperative.
Galapagos and its conservation is okay. People change a lot, the mentality. We understand Galapagos is important, and that's why we want to change. We want to do some activities which be very friendly with the nature.
Like many of the guides we spoke with earlier, Raul had strong opinions about the role of local people in regional politics.
I think the problem, we have to resolve it by ourselves. And when that happened, really, Galapagos start to be different. When we have all this pressure that were before here, outside the island, and we can decide by ourselves. The most news people know about Galapagos is just the little part of the iceberg, because the rest, the really problem are under the sea.
The isolated Galapagos island of Isabela is at the center of the debate on the future of the archipelago. Many people living in the Galapagos now, including teachers such as Susie Garner, naturalist guides Ramiro Tomala and Daniel Fitter, and Scott Henderson of Conservation International, think that this largely pristine island, with only 2,000 people, has great potential to serve as a model for changed policy approaches in the Galapagos.
I think that Isabela is a beautiful, pristine island. Only a small percentage of it has got people in there.
Close contact with nature, highly pristine environment, solitude.
To drive along the main street in Isabela is fabulous because it's sandy. You're right beside the sea. Everybody has a nice, peaceful lifestyle. There is no theft. The children can grow up safely over there. And above all, the people are very happy as they are.
I think everyone recognizes that Isabela has tremendous potential. Interesting enough, Isabela is generally perceived as having the biggest problems relating to fishing.
The community basically functions on illegal fishing. Of course, there's exceptions to that.
What we do know is fishing is probably is the biggest economic activity in Isabela. It's about 220 fishermen, as I recall, in that community of about 2,000.
starting in 1832, that island was inhabited by criminals. And a lot of those people stayed, and they had children and grandchildren.
So they're quite a suspicious society.
There were people forgotten by the government. There were people with no laws. There were people with no education. There were people that didn't have jobs. There were people that lived with very little resources for generations.
So they're very distinct, not very cosmopolitan at all, but very sort of insular.
And now the government jumps in one day and tells them, no, this is not how you do things.
To come in and tell them that they can't be fishermen, that they've got to follow this rule, I think it's going to be very difficult to change.
It's very difficult to change thoughts that have been passed on from generation to generation. It's going to be a very complicated job. It can be done, it should be done, and it must be done.
The Isabella people recently asked that tourism not be improved in Isabella. They didn't want it.
Some islands like Bartholomew are almost full to capacity at the moment. The first group comes in the morning, the second group, the third group, and you almost feel like you're in a line of ants marching along the islands. And this should be the experience of a lifetime for a lot of people. A lot of people have saved up for a long time to come here. What needs to happen here is the government has got to decide whether they want to develop tourism further or keep it the same as it is, at the same level, because if they want to increase tourism here, I think they're going to have to look at maybe doing that in Isabella. But I don't want them to change Isabella too much.
We would like to encourage the idea of a low-impact, high-margin tourism. I know, having spoken with a number of the people in the fishing cooperative over there, they see that as well. The idea of small guest houses as opposed to five-star hotels. We'd certainly like to do what we can to support development in a way that we feel would respond to the interests of the fishing sector and the local community, Isabella.
If the fishermen, if the population there would be able to talk with us and coincide in different strategies to maintain the ecosystems of the Galapagos, that could serve as a model. We have the hope that that will happen. As to when, we're not sure.
Well, you have to get to their hearts. If their hearts are motivated to change and to do alternative jobs, but again, it comes down to an economic factor. There's too much money in what they're doing, so they don't want to change.
While the fishermen of Isabella are resistant to outside intervention in their lives, most are deeply committed to the health of the islands, a common theme among Galapagueños. Alan Tai is a biologist with the Charles Darwin Research Station.
It's extra evident here, I guess, because the animals are so unafraid, and they just treat you as part of the scenery. And that is just wonderful, and it makes you not want to betray the trust, in a way. How do you express that? I don't want to lose any of that. I don't want to lose the ability to go out and watch these things and be in natural habitats, be with nature. I mean, it just sounds corny, but that's what it is. Yeah.
This piece was produced in Terrascope Radio, a class developed by the MIT Terrascope Program in collaboration with the MIT Program in Comparative Media Studies. Terrascope is part of MIT's Earth System Initiative. The program was written, produced, and reported by Anna Jaffe, Garrett Marino, Helene Mormon, and Lisa Song. Translations were written by Mariella Perignon and voiced by Raphael Bras. All sounds and interviews were recorded in the Galapagos. Terrascope Radio is taught by Ari Epstein. Our teaching assistants are Joellen Easton and Rekha Murthy. Special thanks to Deborah Axel and Ruth Weinrib of Terrascope, and Ken Avery of WMBR. For more information on the Galapagos Islands, visit Terrascope's student-made museum exhibits in Building 13 of MIT. They'll be up until May 26. To learn more about the Terrascope program, go to web.mit.edu/terrascope. Thanks for listening.